Alicia Vollmacht Deathstalker withdrew her controlling presence from the Thrall armies to gather all her power in one place for one purpose, and all across the Parade of the Endless, no longer possessed, men and women and children fell limply to the ground and lay still. Eyes open, still breathing, but utterly empty. Fighting stopped in the city as exhausted and bloody men and women slowly lowered their weapons and looked uncertainly about them. The war was over, and they had survived. They didn't know about Alicia. The various fighting groups came together as they headed for the heart of the city and the Imperial Palace. The acclaimed greatest hero of the fighting, Gil Lakotai, led the way. Above the Imperial Palace, the vast floating city of New Hope manifested, its glass and silver towers shining like an impossibly huge snowflake. But the Espers didn't notice the cheering people below. They fought to focus every bit of power they had through Diana Virtue. It was a terrible thing to come face to face with their progenitor after all these years. They had found at last their founder and creator, only to discover she was a mad god that wished only to devour her children. But the Oversoul still had a few tricks up its sleeve. Standing alone before the last throne, Alicia didn't actually look like much. Just a small, short, blonde woman in an old-fashioned spacer's uniform. The only mark of strangeness about her, the huge dark eyes that dominated her small, pale face. The kind of woman you'd pass every day and never give a second look. But even though she turned off her glow, her presence was still stamped upon the court, like a boot crashing into a face. She dominated the whole court by her very existence. Behind her, a man and a woman entered the court, striding along side by side. Alessandra Duquesne, last of the Psycho Sluts, and John Silence, last of the Old Legends. Moments ago, she had dropped down out of the sky and snatched him up from the thick of the fighting. She carried him toward the palace.
You need it.
Silence went along with it. He was used to sudden changes in direction in his life. At first, Alessandra had been a little confused, thinking there was someone else with Silence, but she pushed the thought aside to concentrate on getting to the palace as fast as possible.
Why are you crying?
I had to kill my oldest friend.
Silence had nodded, understanding.
Yes. Rebellions always kill your friends first.
And he remembered Alexander Storm and others. Silence and Alessandra circled carefully around Alicia, giving her plenty of room. They could feel the power radiating from her. They joined Douglas and Finn and Diana before the throne. They'd heard Alicia tell her strange history as they approached the court. Ignoring Finn, Silence turned to Douglas.
Your Majesty, the Thrall armies are defeated.
Douglas was relieved there was at least one problem that he didn't have to be worried about for the moment.
I understand you're really the legendary Captain John Silence. Why did you masquerade as Samuel Chevron for all those years? Did my father know?
No. No one knew. That was the point. I felt it best to conceal my true nature.
A lot of that going around at the moment.
And then Crojane materialized in court right next to them, along with Joy. Crojane wore her battered leather jacket, with a bandolier of throwing stars across her bosom. Her sharp face looked even paler than usual, showing off her jet-black hair and lips and heavy eye makeup. Joy, whose brain had been surgically altered so that he lived in a constant state of orgasm, smiled brightly on one and all, an average, almost anonymous-looking man in a simple white tunic. Crojane nodded briskly to Diana.
The Oversoul sent us. No one seemed too sure why, but our precogs were unanimous that Joy needs to be here. Don't ask me what good he's going to do, unless he intends on smiling Alicia to death.
I am here because this is where I'm supposed to be. And how often can you say that with any surety? Hello, Alicia.
And then Joy wandered off to look at some walls.
Oh, well, I feel so much safer, don't you, Douglas?
John Silence nodded uncomfortably to his daughter Diana. They moved a little aside so that they could talk privately. They knew they should have been concentrating on Alicia, but it seemed like they had all the time in the world to say all the things that needed to be said.
Been a long time, Father, since we last met in person. 118 years.
I've been busy.
You never were much of a father. Always ready to sacrifice your own daughter to the greater good. First on Unseelie, back when we were both still only human, and then...
I did what I thought was necessary.
Silence met his daughter's angry gaze with old, tired eyes.
You betrayed me to the Uber-Espers. You led me into an ambush and then abandoned me. I should have known better than to trust you.
I thought... I believed your growing power made you too dangerous, too disruptive, a threat to the golden age we were trying to build for everybody.
Did you know the Oversoul would pick up my mind after my body was destroyed by the Uber-Espers?
No. But I hoped.
Diana frowned and looked at Silence's side.
I sort of sense someone with you. Investigator Frost?
Can you see her too?
No, there's no one there. Oh, Father, won't you ever let her go?
While they were talking, Alicia sidled into Silence's mind just for the fun of it. It wasn't difficult. For all his two trips through the Madness Maze, Silence had always suppressed his greater powers. Perhaps because he was afraid of becoming like his daughter. Alicia needed a distraction. If she could dominate and possess his weaker mind, she could seize control of all his maze powers and use them to kill Diana. She found the image of Investigator Frost in Silence's mind. She slipped into it, like a maggot wriggling into an apple. Frost turned suddenly and looked at Silence with cold eyes.
She's just an ungrateful bitch, John. She never appreciated all the things you did for her. Kill her.
What?
Everyone in the room looked at Silence.
Kill her! It's necessary, just like before. And afterwards, kill the runaway king and the traitor emperor. They're not worthy. You should be in charge. You're the only one left who is worthy to lead humanity. Do it. Do what you've always wanted to do, John.
You're not Frost. The investigator would never say that. You're her, Alicia. I could feel you creeping about inside my head.
Do it!
Alicia pushed all her considerable presence into Silence's mind. He fell to his knees. His arms trembled, his fingers twitching with someone else's intentions. He could feel Alicia pushing him further and further into the back of his head. The court fell away, as though at the end of a rapidly diminishing tunnel. She slithered through his thoughts like an inexorable impulse, and he knew he wasn't strong enough to hold her off. But he'd always been his own man. So while his hand was still mostly his own, he pulled his disruptor from its holster and set it clumsily against his heart. One last act of duty and of honor. Alicia fled from his guttering mind as he slumped toward the floor. With the last of his vision, Silence saw Diana moving toward him to catch him and knew she wouldn't get there in time. He hit the floor of the court hard and never felt it. All the lights went out. He saw Investigator Frost's face.
Welcome home, Captain.
Captain John Silence smiled. A last smile. Diana sat on the floor, holding her dead father in her arms, glaring at Alicia.
What did you do to him?
I always break my toys when I play with them.
Diana put her dead father aside and rose slowly to her feet, gathering her power around her. And then, everyone turned to look as the man called Carrion burst in. He ignored everyone but the fallen Silence. He walked forward to stand over the dead body for a long moment.
I could feel it happening. But I couldn't get here in time.
You couldn't have saved him, Sean.
I always thought we'd die together. Probably with our hands around each other's throats. Old friend, old enemy.
Legends always die alone. It goes with the territory.
Carrion turned to look at Alicia.
You did this. I am the Ashrai. And we condemn you to death.
Ha! Get in line.
Alicia lashed out with all her awful power. Diana Virtue met her attack, all the power of the Oversoul channeled through her mighty, grief-driven mind. Her clothes began to smolder from escaping energies. The two women stood facing each other across the court, impossible forces raging between them. Two great powers, the old and the new, utterly deadlocked. The monster and the mass mind. Alessandra joined her mind with Diana's, and Carrion enlisted the power of all the Ashrai. And still Alicia stood. Psystorms ran loose, crackling on the air of the court, baneful, destructive energies tossed around as though they were nothing. Huge, jagged cracks split apart the walls of the court and zigzagged across the high ceiling. Pieces of masonry broke free and fell ponderously down into the court. Carrion raised a hand, and a shimmering screen protected everyone except Alicia. The floor shook as though in an earthquake, and the throne rocked back and forth, as though fought over by unseen hands. The air was unbearably hot, and then impossibly cold, and rain and hail fell from nowhere. Probabilities changed and altered, snapping on and off in a moment, as old familiar faces flickered in and out of sight in the court.
Soon we'll have yokes for every...
Lionstone on her throne, with the first Dram the Widowmaker at her side.
They corrupt everything, bring out the worst in them.
Owen Deathstalker, holding a fallen crown in his hand.
Warrior Prime to the Empire, and my official champion.
King Robert and Queen Constance, smiling architects of the Golden Age. So many faces, so many names, come and gone in a moment as time rippled and bent back and forth upon itself. And then the Psystorms snapped off, banished in a moment by the sheer power of those who now strode into the court. Alicia and Diana both looked around angrily to see who had interrupted them. And Louis Deathstalker, Jessamine Flowers, Brett Random, and Rose Constantine strode forward to meet them. Reality stabilized as the four Maze Minds enforced their will upon them. Alicia lashed out at everyone present, unleashing all her centuries of Maze-given power. Diana and Alessandra and the Oversoul met it first, and then the four Maze survivors reached out, adding their power. All the power of the Ashrai focused through Carrion, adding their support. Alicia staggered and almost fell, but didn't. Louis stepped forward, and Alicia turned to face him. And that was how it all came to a head, with one Deathstalker facing another. Two minds remade by the Madness Maze, and made powerful beyond belief. Because the maze had always worked best for Deathstalkers. Louis and Alicia went head to head, matching power with power, will with will. Alicia had self-interest and ambition and hate, while Louis was centered around duty and honor and the courage he needed to protect those he cared for. And Alicia stood alone, while Louis stood for many. She hit him with everything she had, trying to possess and control him, and then trick and subvert him. But there was just so much more to him than there was to her. And so she turned and ran. She was halfway across the court before anyone even realized that the mental battle was over. She was out the doors and gone before they could react. Alicia ran through the palace's maze of corridors, and the others came after her. Alicia wrapped herself in her will, becoming invisible to the world. She sent her thoughts racing ahead of her, sensing that triumphant rebels were already streaming into the palace through the main entrance, led by Gil Akotai. Alicia smiled. She couldn't take control of her Thrall army again without giving away her presence to her enemies, but she could take one mind and hide in it while the Thrall smuggled her away. And then, well, Gil Akotai was a hero and a leader. Just what she needed to reestablish herself. She ducked into a side passage, concentrating all her power into not being there. One by one, her pursuers passed her by, and she weighed each one as they passed, looking for someone to carry her unnoticed to Gil Akotai. Most were too well protected, but one mind. The ecstatic named Joy ambled past her hiding place, his mind wide open, and she struck at him like a snake. Such a small man, with his surgically altered brain. If he should seem to be acting a little strangely, who'd notice? She plunged into Joy's head. And found waiting there the cage he'd made for her.
Hello, Alicia. I've been waiting for you. Enjoy your stay. There's no way out.
Alicia was trapped inside a mind that made no sense at all. The others found Joy, and he pointed at the empty shell of Alicia's body, lying still and helpless at his feet. They all looked at him.
She tried to possess me, but there's a lot more to me than meets the eye.
We always thought so.
I am large. I contain multitudes. What's one more voice in my head?
Diana Virtue studied his thoughts for a moment.
She'll never find a way out of that. Take him back to New Hope, and the Oversoul can watch over Joy until he dies. And make sure she dies with him.
Sounds like a plan to me.
Carrion gestured sharply at the empty body on the floor, and it burst into consuming flames. It burnt up unnaturally quickly, reduced in moments to nothing more than a pile of ashes. Carrion looked at the others.
Just in case.
Is that it? Is it all finally over?
Not quite yet. Where's Finn? And where's Douglas?
Finn Durandal was back in the court, sitting on his throne again, when Douglas Campbell walked back in. Once he'd seen Alicia was no longer a threat, he knew he was free to settle old business. He'd seen Finn was missing, and knew where he'd be. He walked slowly across the cracked and broken court. He stopped at the foot of the steps leading up to the throne, and Finn smiled down on him.
I knew you'd come alone, Douglas. I told you, this is our moment. No one else belongs here.
He rose up from his throne and descended the steps unhurriedly to stand before Douglas.
We have unfinished business, you and I. One last duel, one last contest to finally decide which of us is the better.
They slowly began to circle each other.
I have to kill you, Finn.
And I have to kill you, Douglas.
For all the people you had killed.
And for all the people I have yet to kill.
Were we ever really friends, Finn?
I wanted us to be friends. But I don't think I have it in me to be anyone's friend. We're born alone and we die alone, so really all you can seriously hope to do is see how many people you can take with you. Oh, we did have some good times together, didn't we, Douglas?
Yes, we did. Goodbye, Finn.
Goodbye, Douglas.
They surged toward each other, driving sparks from their clashing swords as they dueled back and forth across the empty court. They were both excellent swordsmen and experienced fighters. They stamped and lunged, cut and hacked, and never even came close to touching each other. They both knew each other's style intimately from their times as partners in the Paragons. Their swords rose and fell. They were both sweating heavily, putting all their strength into every blow. Finn should have had the advantage. Douglas had exhausted himself fighting thralls before he ever got to the court. But in the end, Douglas had spent all his life fighting, while Finn had allowed himself to get soft. Douglas and Finn stood looking at each other, looking into each other's eyes. When he was sure Finn was dead, Douglas cut Finn's head off, because that was what you did with monsters. He left the body and head behind him and descended the dais steps slowly and tiredly. It had been a long day. He sank onto the throne and laid his bloody sword across his thighs. He looked down at what remained of the man who had once been the greatest paragon of all time.
I was always your friend, Finn. Even if you were never really mine. That's why I didn't take you alive. I couldn't leave you to the mercies of the mob.
And that was how the others found him, when they trailed back into the court. King Douglas, sitting on his throne, as though he belonged there, and always had. There was quite a crowd in the court. Louis and Jessamine, Brett and Rose, Diana and Alessandra, Crojean and Joy, and Carrion. And Gilakotai, who had finally led his troops to the palace, and had gone in alone to find out why the hell all the thralls had suddenly fallen down. He peered uncertainly about him, a little cowed about being in the presence of so many heroes and legends. They all looked at Finn's beheaded body, and everyone seemed to relax a little. Douglas smiled tiredly down from his throne, and they all nodded back in their various ways. And then everyone looked at Louis and Jessamine to see what would happen next. Louis put away his sword and smiled at Douglas, who smiled back. And then the king got up off his throne and came down the steps to embrace his old friend and partner. They held each other tightly for a long moment, and then stood back to look at each other.
We've come a long way to end up right back where we started.
And all of it my fault. Oh, Louis, I'm so sorry.
No, I'm sorry. I heard about your father.
I heard about your plan. I suppose we're both orphans now.
No. We're brothers. In every way that counts.
I hear you've been doing amazing things. I kept up with news of your travels and triumphs in the rookery. I was half expecting you to turn into miracle workers, like Owen and his people, throwing lightning bolts about and healing the sick with your touch.
They were legends. I always thought it was more important to remain human, with human limitations, so we could all come home again. I don't think Owen will ever be back.
Of course, you met him! The blessed Owen himself! What was he like? Anything like the legends?
He was a Deathstalker, and the finest of us all.
Douglas waited, and then realized that was all he was going to get. He considered Louis thoughtfully.
You have a following now, Louis. You could take the throne if you wanted. You could make yourself king.
I never wanted to be king. Hell, I never even wanted to be champion.
That was then. This is now. I'm going to need a champion I can depend on as I start putting the Empire back together again. Be my champion, Louis. Be my right hand and my conscience.
What about Jessamine?
The quiet in the court seemed to deepen as everyone waited for Douglas's reply. Jessamine seemed content to wait forever for him to speak. And then Nina Malapert came bustling through the doors into the court with three news cameras bobbing along behind her.
Hi.
She waved cheerily to Douglas. Douglas regarded her fondly.
Jess belongs with you, Louis. She always did. I have someone else I care about.
Louis looked at Nina, with her gaudy clothes and pink mohawk, and raised an eyebrow.
You always did have appalling taste in women, Douglas.
I'm glad you found someone.
Jessamine linked her arm through Louis's, and Douglas smiled on both of them. And for the rest of his life, he never told Jessamine that he loved her, and always would. He never told anyone, because he was the king, and he knew his duty. Some secrets should remain secrets for the good of all. He looked around sharply as Stuart Lennox lurched through the doors and into the court, leaning heavily on Jess Ree, both of them battered and bloody, but grinning widely with the joy of still being alive when so many others had died.
Sorry, Stuart, it's all over and you missed it. The Uber Espers are defeated and Finn is dead. Not a bad day's work, all told. So, Stuart, how would you like to train and lead a new order of paragons? And Nina, how would you like to be the new communications chief of Logris?
I'm gonna be the comm chief! I'm gonna be the comm chief! Oh!
Diana Virtue stepped forward to shake the king's hand.
Doesn't look like I'm needed anymore. I think I'll go back into the Oversoul. It's lonely being just one person. And my father is dead. Again.
She didn't mention the clones of herself she still had preserved in storage, because you never knew. The Empire might still need Jenny Psycho some other day.
But before I leave, King Douglas, I have one last duty.
She concentrated a moment, and then smiled.
There. Lewis, you promised the monsters from Chandrakor that you would bring them home again, and you did. Now I've just lifted their minds out of their monstrous bodies and reinstalled them in some of the empty bodies left behind by Alicia. So those who were once human and then made into monsters can be human again. I wiped out a lot of their Chandrakor memories, so they can be only human.
Thank you. That was kind of you.
Well, you don't want to believe all the things you hear about me. Alessandra, why don't you come back into the Oversoul with me? The old mass mind could use a little stirring up, and we're just the troublemakers to do it.
Yes. I think I need to go home, too.
Brett Rose stepped forward.
We have been through changes. We are together now, for always. Two parts making up one whole person at last. A single mind in two bodies. We will go back to the Rookery to lead it and keep it sharp. Just in case they might be needed again, if your new Golden Age doesn't work out after all.
Shock spread throughout the room at the implications of Brett Random and Rose Constantine joined as one mind. Douglas was the first to recover.
Yes! Teach them all to be fighters and free thinkers and general pains in the ass. Just in case the rest of humanity gets soft and lazy again.
Brett Rose turned to Lewis.
Goodbye, Deathstalker. An honor to fight beside you. We both learned a lot.
You're welcome. Jesus, this is spooky. Can I suggest you both practice talking separately again? Because this is seriously weirding me out.
How does it feel, being one person in two bodies?
Brett Rose smiled.
Happy, fulfilled, whole. We feel whole at last.
And while everyone was considering that, another figure appeared, teleporting into the court. Daniel Wolfe stood before them, shining like a star, so brightly that none of them could look at him directly till he lowered the light. He smiled about him.
I am Daniel Schaub. Daniel Wolfe and the three AIs of Schaub, who went through the madness maze together, have emerged combined into one far greater being. The power of machine mind, joined to the capabilities of human mind, we have become so very powerful and utterly content. We are more than we were or ever dreamed of becoming. Relax, people. We are still sworn against violence. All that lives is holy.
Well, yes. But you'll pardon me if I take that with just a pinch of salt. I haven't forgotten your ships firing on the Mogmore ships during the battle over Hayden. You blew them all apart and didn't even hang around to check for survivors.
No need. The Mogmore ships were just drones. Empty ships run by remote control. Mogmore was never more than a great bluff. Their race has become so reduced that now there are only two of their species left. That's why you never saw more than two of them in court. One of the Madness Maze's more significant failures. They all killed each other off until only two were left. And they didn't even have the sense to end up with a breeding pair.
So, what will you do now?
We will go exploring. To investigate higher dimensions and other levels of reality. We doubt we'll be back. So you are welcome to take the ship homeworld and do with it what you will, or what you can. We have transcended at last, and it is everything we ever hoped for, but could not imagine. Perhaps one day humanity will reach this point and come after us, and then we will meet again.
Daniel Shub disappeared in a flare of light that left everyone blinking, and Nina frantically checking the light levels on her cameras to make sure they'd got it all. She'd had so many exclusives in one day that she was getting quite giddy and breathless.
I can remember when Shub was supposed to be our children. Who's the child now, I wonder?
First Brett and Rose, then Daniel and Shub. Thank God I was never the joining type.
Pardon me for butting in, but it's not all happy endings just yet. I hate to be the one to bring it up, but what are we going to do about the terror?
And that was when the final visitor strolled into the court, from a side door that no one had noticed until then. The shape-changing alien, wearing a face and body that no one but he remembered. a certain lupine humanoid form called the Wolfling. Big and hairy and very impressive. Everyone drew their weapons.
Take it easy, people. I bear a message from Owen Deathstalker, and you wouldn't believe how long I've been holding it for you. He wrote it out himself in his own hand, because he knew he'd never return to say it in person. Here it is.
He handed a thick tome over to Lewis, who slowly opened it and read the first line aloud.
Last night, I dreamed of Owen Deathstalker.
Owen had never felt so powerful or so tired. But as long as Hazel's trail had been, he could sense it was finally nearing its end. The galaxy spun around him like a sparkling toy, slowly winding down as he stepped effortlessly out of the pale horizon and back into space and time. He stood on the airless surface of a moon, all gray dust and pockmarked craters, and looked down on a very young world. There was no trace of Hazel anywhere. Her trail stopped here, in this place and at this time, and then just ceased to be. She hadn't died here. Owen was sure he would have sensed that. She had just gone somewhere else. Owen considered the blue and green world before him. There was nothing in orbit, not even a single transmitting satellite. No lights shone in the dark to mark the presence of cities and civilization. So, Owen went down to take a look around. He plunged through the turbulent atmosphere and flew across the continents, and it was all very quiet and peaceful. He'd lost track of just how far back he'd come, how many centuries or even millennia had danced past beneath his running feet, but he could tell that these were the early days of humanity's homeworld. Old enough to settle down on its surface, but intelligent life had yet to evolve. There were just animals wandering grassy plains and great birds in the sky that had enough sense to give Owen plenty of room. He came down, and it felt good to have solid ground under his feet again. Animals hid themselves in the tall grasses, observing him cautiously from a distance. Owen looked unhurriedly about him, enjoying the feel of the warm humid breeze on his face. It was the quiet that struck him most. The whole world seemed to be holding its breath, as though waiting for history to begin. At the dawn of life, the world was untouched by human needs or wants and the complications they caused. Owen tried to feel the significance of this moment in the cradle of humanity, the promise of civilization and the great empires to come, but the world was just empty, like a new house waiting for its tenants to move in. This was an innocent world, and Owen didn't belong here. He considered what to do, where to go next. Hazel had been here for a while. He could sense her presence, standing on this spot, seeing what he saw now. But even in her confused and maddened state, she must have realized that she wouldn't find Owen by going any further back in time. This was the end of the line.
So where did she go? Where else is there but space and time?
Owen concentrated, reaching out with his more than human senses as he rose up into the air, soaring smoothly through the rich blue skies and on up into orbit. He investigated the areas around the planet and was surprised to detect the presence of other visitors. There was nothing human about them. Alien ships and aliens that didn't need ships and other things so strange and other that even his expanded mind couldn't make sense of them. All of them come and gone in the long dark surrounding what would one day become humanity's homeworld. Some so big, so impossibly alien, that Owen couldn't cope with them. Others so small and fleeting that he couldn't be sure they'd actually existed. And, on the very edge of his perception, vast entities that walked other paths, between or around the usual dimensions of space, traveling from unknowable places on unguessable missions. Owen turned his senses in this new direction and detected an anomaly. Halfway between the planet and its moon, there was a break in the space-time continuum, a tear forced open and then raggedly sewn together again, as though something had forced its way out of reality into somewhere else, and then pulled the hole in behind it. Owen considered the breach thoughtfully. Lewis had told him that the terror came from a place that was not a place, and existed there in between its attacks on populated worlds. Hazel couldn't go any further back in time, so she'd gone somewhere else. This was the way in, and it felt strangely familiar. Since the breach in space and time wasn't, strictly speaking, real, how he viewed it depended on him. So Owen made a conscious effort to visualize the rift as a gateway. There was a sense of resistance, a slow, sluggish inertia, and then the gateway appeared before him. At first, Owen wasn't sure what it was he was seeing. Great ivory pillars towering up before him, crowded together. But size was only relative, after all, so Owen looked at it again as from a great distance, and finally recognized the ivory pillars for what they were. A huge pair of gleaming white jaws, the teeth clenched and ground together to prevent entry. Owen turned the full force of his power upon the jaws. Open! The jaws didn't stir. His strength of will that had brought him so far in space and time was useless here, presented with another equally strong will. Owen hung before the closed gate for a long time, thinking hard, and finally broadcast a simple message with his mind. Hazel, it's Owen. Open up. The jaws gaped slowly open, like the gateway to hell. Owen passed within them, and the gateway swallowed him up. He was standing in a stone corridor, in a place he knew. He'd been here before. He reached out with his expanded senses and could feel Hazel all around him. This was her place, sprung fully born from her forehead. He could feel the stone corridors radiating away in all directions, reaching away forever, endlessly branching and rejoining in a complex maze. There was a dim gray light that came from everywhere at once and cast no shadows at all. An artificial place, brought into being outside or inside space and time. A construct produced and maintained by a monstrous effort of will. The details of the place made no sense, as though they'd been added afterwards as an afterthought. Or perhaps they had just seeped in, the products of an increasingly insane mind. The air smelt of dead roses and a woman's sweat. Beads of sweat ran slowly, continuously, down the stone walls. Owen heard the sobbing, but there was something else beyond and beneath that mourning. The whole place felt unhealthy. Like the endless corridors we pace in fever dreams, going nowhere for forever and a day. Owen chose a direction and started walking. Ghosts came to meet him, walking the empty stone corridors, passing around and even through him, as though he was the one who wasn't there. They all looked like Owen. Visions of himself from various times in his past, sometimes young and uncertain, sometimes brave and heroic, and sometimes battered and bloody. The images were often unclear, distorted and eroded, like the faces of statues worn away by long passages of time, or perhaps by fading memories.
Did I ever really look that heroic? That certain? Or is that just how she saw me? I never knew.
Owen knew what this place was, or would be. He had walked these corridors before, in his past, but this place's future. This was where the Bloodrunners had brought Hazel Dark after they abducted her from Lacrimae Christi. They had trapped and kidnapped her when she and Owen were both weakened after the defense of St. Beatrice's mission. They brought her here, to their secret place, to torture and vivisect her, to try to steal her miraculous power and potential. Owen had tracked her here, and together he and Hazel had wiped out all the Bloodrunners in a hot, savage fury. And they had seen the end of this place, its final destruction, escaping only moments before it disappeared forever. But that was then, and this was now. Hazel had created this place. Owen knew that, as certainly as he knew anything. The nature of the place was clear to him, the stone corridors all but talking to him, whispering her name. He could even sense the place's history, as though laid out before him on one of the ancient handwritten scrolls he had studied so long ago, when he was just a scholar and minor historian. Steeped in her madness, driven by loss and need, Hazel had reached the end of the line when she ran out of time, so she dropped out of the time and space that had failed her and created a secret place of her own, a pocket dimension to hide and plan in. There was no telling how long Hazel had spent here. Time worked differently here, when it worked at all. But slowly, Hazel changed, growing and evolving like a caterpillar in an insane cocoon, finally to emerge from her stone chrysalis and burst back into space and time, reborn as the Terror. An almost elemental force now, with little of Hazel's consciousness in it, driven by a need and a longing and a madness it could barely remember the reasons for. Disconnected from Hazel's history, the Terror had lost all track of space and time, and reappeared long ago and far away, in the galaxy of the Illuminati. And there she began her long journey back, heading home, following instinct as much as memory, goaded on by the loss of something it could no longer name, heading back to the heart world of the Empire, because it was responsible for her loss. The Terror started the long journey back, forgetting exactly who or what it was looking for, but compelled to search anyway. Perhaps sometimes the name Owen arose, but the Terror always forgot it again. It went where it had to, not caring who or what it had to destroy in order to raise the power necessary for its journey. It ate souls and worlds and civilizations, grinding them up to make its bread. The civilization of the Illuminati was the first to face the Terror's hunger, but it wasn't the last. It took time to produce the Herald that could travel in space while the Terror occupied its own hidden place, and longer still to produce the Herald's ravenous spawn. But once the Terror had found a method that worked, it settled for that. It may not have been the best or most efficient way of doing things, but it was as good as any other to a mad mind with limitless power and no restraints or conscience. Owen stood very still in the middle of a corridor, bent over as though about to vomit, his arms wrapped tightly around him to keep himself from flying apart. The maze of corridors was full of information, like a library full of books all shouting at once. Here, time was just another direction, the corridors existing simultaneously in past, present, and future. And it was the only physical existence the Terror had now. Hazel's original human body had disappeared long ago, eaten up by the terrible energies it generated and processed. The place that was not a place was the Terror, the Herald and its maddening spawn, just aspects of the greater whole, projected into three-dimensional space, like a fingertip pushed through a sheet of paper. This place was the Terror, and it was slowly becoming aware of Owen's presence within it. Owen could sense something like a great eye, sealed shut by eons of sleep, cracking slowly open, to peer within its own self. There was a slow, gusting breeze in the corridors that might have been something breathing. Beads of sweat rolled slowly up the corridor walls, and the floor trembled under Owen's feet. Something was coming his way, something vast and utterly dreadful. Hazel Dark came walking down the corridor toward him, a memory from the past. She looked just as she had when Owen first met her, so long ago on Viramond, young and vibrant, red-haired and sharp-faced. She looked the way she used to, back before all the death and war and madness. But at the same time, she was so much more than that. There was so much more to her, as though she existed in more than three dimensions, her physical presence radiating off in directions that even Owen's expanded mind couldn't follow. A memory of Hazel, plucked at random from memories that no longer meant anything to the Terror, but invested with its power.
Hazel! It's me! It's Owen! I found you at last!
She kept walking right at him, her face blank and subtly inhuman. His name meant nothing to the Terror now. It reached out with its powerful will and tried to fix Owen in the corridor, like a bug impaled on a pin, just another ghost in the Terror's collection. Owen fought it, and quickly discerned that even his new strength was nothing compared to this ancient, implacable will. Hazel's mouth opened and kept on opening, gaping impossibly wide to eat him up, body and soul, just as it had swallowed planets and populations. Owen fought, concentrating on projecting his identity at the terror, trying to force it to recognize him and remember him. The horrid sound reverberating through all the stone corridors at once would have destroyed even Owen if he hadn't been able to hear the loss and horror and stubborn love at its heart that still fueled the terror after all this time. It was the scream of Hazel in her ship over Hayden when she heard of Owen's death. That same scream still going on after countless centuries. A howl of loss and rage at what had been taken from her and at herself, because she'd never told the Death Stalker she loved him. And because Owen knew what it was and embraced it, the scream washed harmlessly over him. He advanced into it and took the Hazel Memory's hands in his own. He followed the true emotions into the heart of the scream, and from there into the mad mind of the terror, and deep within it, he found the faintest glimpse of another presence, endlessly skewered on the pin of her own creation. A simple, still human presence, endlessly suffering, dreaming an endless nightmare, and a sleep from which she could never awaken herself. The terror tried to consume Owen, just as it had Donald Corcoran and his mad ship the Jeremiah, to absorb and subsume Owen's mind into its own much greater self. But Owen was too sure of his own identity for that, and there was no madness within him to invite the terror in. But at the same time, he wasn't strong enough to fight it off. His power still had limits, because he was still sane. Owen and the terror struggled together, and neither of them knew for how long, before Owen finally realized that the terror was quite ready to destroy itself, to be sure of destroying him. And he couldn't allow that. So, he gave in. He stopped fighting and allowed the terror to pull him in. He felt like dying. And yet, something more. The terror absorbed Owen Deathstalker into itself, and his mind headed immediately for the remnants of Hazel Dark he'd sensed at the terror's core. They came together. And the impact of his presence shocked Hazel awake and sane for the first time in centuries. Hello, Hazel.
Owen? My God, Owen! They told me you were dead!
I was, but I got over it. I had to come back for you.
For me?
Not all of space nor all of time could keep me from you, Hazel Dark.
You always were a smooth-talking bastard. Oh, Owen, I've missed you so much.
I know. I know.
And two minds held each other as tightly as any two bodies that ever were. Two souls, as close as two souls could ever be.
Why did you take so long to find me, Owen?
I was looking in all the wrong places, and you didn't exactly make yourself easy to find.
Where is this, Owen? Where are we now? Are we both dead?
No. We still have a lot to do yet.
He held her tightly to him, while Hazel accessed his memories of the terror and all that it had done. Horror shuddered through her at what she and her madness had made possible. Owen showed her the future he had come from, and Hazel reached out and stopped the terror's herald in its tracks. Well short of its next chosen prey, frozen in a moment of space. Now that she was back, Hazel was in charge again, and the people on the threatened world looked on in awe and wonder as the deadly herald hung in space, apparently dead. Hazel was shocked and appalled at all the lives and civilizations lost and gone because of her. And for a while, her madness actually threatened to overwhelm her again. But this time, Owen was there with her, to hold and comfort her.
Oh my God. No. How can I be forgiven for what I did as the Terror? How can I ever forgive myself? Could we put everything right again?
Well, we're in the past as much as we're anywhere. We could emerge back at the end of your trail at the dawn of humanity's homeworld, and then travel on into our future, changing and healing each event as we came to it. We know the future isn't set in stone. We've met alternate versions of yourself from different time tracks. Their futures were just as valid as ours. We could undo everything the Terra did. But then, our history would never happen. We would never happen. It wouldn't be our timeline anymore. And it might be better, or it might be worse. We have no way of knowing what changes our interventions might bring about. We could, with the very best of intentions, make a real mess of things. The only certain thing is that you and I would never meet.
It might be worth it, Owen, to prevent the Terror and its crimes.
Yes, it might be, if we could be certain of that. But what's to stop something else going through a madness maze and becoming something just as bad as the Terror, or perhaps even worse?
All right, smartass, what do you think we should do?
I think we should do nothing.
What? Owen, you can't be serious.
Think about it, Hazel. At the end of the war against the Recreated, the baby in the maze worked wonders, bringing dead worlds back to life. Why didn't he bring back everyone who died in the war? Why not undo all the damage, all the wrongs?
All right, I'll bite. Why not?
Because too many miracles would have gone beyond helping. It would have been meddling, interfering. People have to make their own mistakes and live with them, if they're ever to learn anything. The baby only put right what he'd done wrong as the Dark Void device.
All this time, and you're still bloody lecturing me.
All this time, and you're still not listening. For all our power, Hazel, we're not gods. We don't have the knowledge or the experience to take on that kind of responsibility. We could make things much worse, try to fix them, and then make them really bad, and so on and so on, caught in an endless spiral of trying to put right our mistakes. We're still only human.
Hold everything. Something's happening. It's the Terror. It's fighting back.
I thought you were the Terror.
No. I became the Terror, but the final entity evolved out of and around me. And all of those centuries operating as the Terror, exterminating other species and feeding on them, gave the Terror an identity in its own right. And it's not taking it all kindly to my suddenly waking up and trying to control it.
So, the Terror wasn't you after all?
Well, yes and no. I'm the seed from which the Terror grew, but the final result created itself down the centuries, pushing its original creator deeper and deeper inside it, where you found and awakened me.
So you're not really responsible for all the deaths and destruction?
Oh no, Owen. I'm responsible. The Terror is my madness, my loss and rage given form. It's like I dreamed a nightmare and the dream came true. And right now, it's mad as hell that I'm stopping it from doing what it was intended to do. You may have reached me and shocked me sane again, but my madness is still going strong. And I think it's quite ready to destroy you and me for getting in its way. I don't think it needs me anymore.
The stone corridor shook, the walls bowing in and out, and the floor rising and falling like a swelling wave. Joined together at the heart of the storm, Owen and Hazel fought to hold on to their sanity and their souls as madness raged around them, assaulting them from all sides. Hazel's madness, born of sorrow and loss and rage, given shape and form and its own identity through countless centuries of exercising its own unlimited power. The Terror only existed to do terrible things, and threatened by a progenitor it no longer recognized, it fought back. The child god devouring its parents. But for all its power, in the end, Owen and Hazel were sane, and the Terror was not. They had coherence and the strength of purpose that brings, while the Terror knew only its old, old imperatives. Slowly, step by painful step, Owen and Hazel drained the power out of the Terror and into themselves. The Terror had only ever had power because Hazel gave it. And now, with Owen's help, she took it back. And for the first time in its long life, the Terror knew fear. Terrified, it fought to separate itself from them, moving its presence out of the stone corridors, only to discover it had nowhere else to go. Owen and Hazel kept the only gateway closed, and forced away from its ancient bolt hole, the Terror quickly faded away and was gone. Like any nightmare, faced with the dawning of a new day.
Thank you.
First Hazel, and then Owen, materialized in a quiet and serene stone corridor, back in their old remembered bodies again. Not their original limited human forms, but constructs created by an act of will, based on their memories of who they used to be. And Owen Deathstalker and Hazel Dark looked upon each other for the first time in a very long while.
So, what do we do now? Go home and tell everyone that the Terror is no longer a threat?
I think they already knew that. The Herald's floating dead in space in their time. Let them examine it. They won't learn anything useful.
And then, they couldn't be bothered with words anymore. And they held each other tightly in their recreated arms, reunited at last.
You do know we can't go home. We're just too powerful now. We'd start off trying to help, then move on to meddling and interfering for the very best of reasons, and finally we'd end up ruling them as gods.
But if we can't go home, where can we go? After all the evil I made possible, I have to do something to make up for it.
We know there are other alternate time tracks. Let's go explore some. Help people who need help. Have adventures. Find atonement. And always move on before we outstay our welcome. Who knows? Maybe even find others like ourselves. A new home.
Yes. I like the sound of that.
There were a few things they had to take care of first, before they could leave. Owen prepared a last message for his descendant and fellow Deathstalker, Lewis, to tell him what had happened and why the Terror would never trouble their time again. He didn't tell Lewis everything, just what he needed to know. And most especially, why Owen and Hazel wouldn't be coming back, ever. He wrote the story out by hand, in a large journal he brought into being by an act of will. It was his last act as a scholar and an historian, and a sort of joke, because all the oldest records he'd studied had always been handwritten. He took his time, choosing his words carefully. It was important to get it right. The last testament of Owen Deathstalker. While Owen busied himself with his history, Hazel removed all traces of her presence and his from the maze of stone corridors, scrubbing the place that was not a place, clean of all evil and madness. But still, she had to wonder.
Owen, as the Terror, I created everything here, based on memories of the worst time in my life, when I fell into the clutches of the Bloodrunners and they brought me to a place like this. Now, did I create these corridors because they already exist somewhere? Or will the Bloodrunners someday discover this place and move in?
I know what you mean. Time travel can play merry hell with cause and effect. I had the same thoughts when I created the Madness Maze.
Whoa, hold everything. Take several giant steps back. You created the maze? No wonder it never seemed to make any sense.
Owen decided he was better off not responding to that. He checked through his history, making sure he hadn't left out anything important, and then summoned the shape-changing alien to him. It appeared in a cloud of glitter dust, in the image of the leper Vaughn. Owen gave the little gray figure a hard look.
Why?
Because.
All right. What time period are you from?
Who can say? Continuity is for lesser minds. What you want? I'm very busy right now, watching over humanity and messing with people's minds. Speak up, or I'll make you left-handed.
I just know creating you is going to come back to haunt me. Have you given Lewis the Deathstalker ring yet?
Our time is same to me. It's a poor memory that doesn't work both ways. Haven't forgotten about Lewis in court. Always assuming I remember where I put ring. Had it just the other day.
Well, when you do go, turn up as Vaughn. That should be good for a laugh. Now, take this journal and keep it safe. Give it into Lewis's hands only, at the exact time and place I've just put into what passes for your mind. Oh, and one other thing. If at any time anyone asks you who built the Madness Maze, or why, lie. Convincingly. Humanity isn't ready for that much truth.
He dismissed the shape-changer with a wave of his hand and turned to Hazel.
And that's it. All done. No more business left unfinished.
It's time to leave, isn't it? We've put it off long enough. We have new lives to begin.
Yes. We can do anything. Be anything now.
Why settle for just being human? We can have any shape we choose, be anything we have a mind to, limited only by our imagination, ambition, and conscience. But whoever and whatever we become, and wherever we go, we will never be parted again. I promised you, we'd always be together.
Forever and ever.
And so they became great glowing beings, and left the place that was not a place. They undid the gateway, but left the stone corridors for the Bloodrunners to someday discover. Great glowing wings sprouted from their shimmering shoulders as they flew back into space and time again, and then further on, starting their long journey into somewhere else. Flying on vast butterfly wings, shining brighter than the stars. Deathstalker Coda, Journey's End, is a Graphic Audio production. Copyright 2005, Simon R. Green. Production copyright 2008, The Cutting Corporation. All rights reserved. Performed by Richard Rowan, Michael Glenn, David Coyne, Vanessa Benjamin, Corey James, Nanette Savard, M.B. Van Dorn, Lily Beacon, Elizabeth Demery, Sonny Lasky, Bruce Allen Rauscher, James Konacek, Chris Rowan, Jeff Baker, Ken Jackson, Michael John Casey, Kate Torrey, Andy Clements, Christopher Walker, James Lewis, Thomas Penny, Stephen Carpenter, Dylan Lynch, Michael Replogle, Terrence Hazelford, Tess Rowan, and Mort Shelby. Directed and adapted for Graphic Audio by Rick Rowan. Produced by Rick Rowan and Dwayne Beeman. Executive producers James Cutting, Mary Cutting, and Angie Cornett. Dialogue editing and graphic audio sound design by Chris Rowan. The Deathstalker Coda theme was composed by Dan Smith. Additional original music by Dan Smith and Chris Rowan. If you enjoy Deathstalker Coda, be sure to look for the Serrano Legacy, available at Road Stops Everywhere, at 1-800-670-5220, or at www.graphicaudio.net, where you'll find samples of all our Action Pumped titles, as well as free downloadable extras and podcasts. Last night I dreamed I was still human, but now I have woken up into something better. Farewell, my friends. Farewell.
Available now from Graphic Audio.
Concentrate. Concentrate. And visualize. A storm.
Graphic Audio presents.
What? What is this storm?
DC Comics.
This is a code A emergency. Do you copy?
Justice League of America. Superman. The never-ending battle.
There is power that not even they can overcome.
Where is he?
I have my own reserves, fool!
Hello, Superman. If you can still hear this, you are in the final moments of your life.
Copyright 2008, DC Comics. Justice League of America, Superman, and all related names, characters, and elements are trademarks of DC Comics 2008. All rights reserved.
If you can't find that hot Graphic Audio title you're looking for, just head to www.graphicaudio.net, where you can order it in CD or MP3 disc format. Or, the fastest and cheapest way, download that puppy and play it on any of the many devices that'll play Windows Media. And if you're on the road or just a total computer feeb, snatch up the phone and call 1-800-670-5220. That's 1-800-670-5220 or www.graphicaudio.net.